Friday's shooting at a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado has left 12 people dead, 59 injured, and an entire community in horror as the victims face an uncertain future, a rocky road to mental and physical recovery. We are left to make sense of such a random act of violence. Dr. Ronald Shouten, a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School in Boston, joins us this morning. He is a director of the Law and Psychiatry Service at Massachusetts General Hospital, and currently works on assessing the mental state of criminals. He's also co-author of the book Almost a Psychopath, which examines the dangers of undiagnosed psychopathic behaviors. Ron, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us. Again, Dr. Shouten is the author of the book Almost a Psychopath and a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School in Boston. Let us begin with the obvious question of is it ever possible to try to make sense of such an act of violence? And if we can't, what should we do instead?
Well, oddly, I mean, we can make sense of it only if we can get inside the head of the perpetrator and understand what their mindset is and how they view the world and how they view themselves in the world. If someone is politically motivated, if they have ideological purposes behind their act of violence, you can put it into the context of them being rationally driven. They have an end they want to accomplish. If someone is driven by severe mental illness, their underlying purpose is certainly, you know, irrational, but there's a certain logic in it. If they feel they're being persecuted by the rest of the world and they need to lash out at the world to stop some greater harm to themselves or others, then they're acting violently, at least inside, again, their own head and their own logic makes some sense.
But on the face of it, it's not rational. We can't understand what the motivation would be for doing something like this.
Correct. Correct. Not until we know a lot more about this person. But as you say, at the very heart of it, it's completely senseless and irrational to go out and cause this kind of harm.
One of the things that I find interesting about us as humans is we're fairly resilient to this stuff, aren't we? I mean, as a culture, we're resilient to it.
We are. We are. Human beings are remarkably well put together to recover from traumas of this type. The vast majority of people, even if they're very close to the action and you know very close to the event, will have a number of symptoms of anxiety and bounce back. Witness how basically virtually everyone in the Northeast responded to the terrorist attacks on September 11th. Those closest to the event, those of course who lost loved ones, will take much longer to recover because they have the grieving process, and those who were wounded may go on and have pretty significant problems with post-traumatic stress disorder and other anxiety disorders beyond that for years to come.
Dr. Ronald Shouten is our guest this morning. His book is Almost a Psychopath. We do welcome your phone calls this morning, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. And we'll be going to those in a moment. In the book Almost a Psychopath, you talk about, what exactly almost a psychopath is, the subtitle being, do I or does someone I know have a problem with manipulation and a lack of empathy? What are some of the key characteristics when it comes to an almost psychopath?
Well, yeah, a full-blown psychopath is someone when we rate them on something called the psychopathy checklist, revised scores in the 30 to 40 range, and they have conning and manipulative behavior, lack of empathy, lack of remorse for harm they've caused to others, risk-taking behavior, promiscuity, failure to take responsibility. So there are 20 of these items. People who fall into the subclinical or range on psychopathy, or what we call an almost psychopath, are people who may have, will have a number of these traits, but at less intensity and fewer in number. One of the most important things I think that we do in the book, and that's quite relevant to the shooting in Colorado, is we distinguish between psychosis and psychopathy. Psychosis is a condition in which someone lacks an appreciation of reality or has a distorted sense of reality. And while we don't know anything about the mental state of the of the alleged perpetrator here, it is based on what we know so far, more likely that he is suffering from some sort of significant mental illness beyond psychopathy.
And do those often go hand in hand?
Certainly you can have people with severe mental illness who also have psychopathic traits. On the other hand, they tend to, in more cases than not, they're separate.
You have a guy who reportedly dropped out of a graduate program in neuroscience, and I'm just curious as to whether you think there is a correlation between that stress of school. I mean, this is a bright guy who got through that program to a certain degree, right? And that desire to want to commit this level of violence.
It depends how he regards it, his having difficulty in the program. So my understanding is he was quite the stellar undergraduate student, then began to have difficulty. There are certain mental illnesses that start to show themselves in late adolescence, early adulthood, and are often marked by what we call a prodromal phase, where there's a deterioration in prior functioning. If the person starts to fail in their life pursuits, they may decide that it's appropriate to take revenge for that, or they may develop some sort of delusion related to that. Case in point is not dissimilar from Stephen Kazmierczyk, who did the shootings at Northern Illinois University a number of years ago.
So of this, and you say in the book that we're talking about anywhere from like 5 to 15% of the population that is almost psychopath, in your opinion.
Correct.
So what do we do for them? How do we catch that?
Well, we catch that by paying attention, by taking note of behaviors in ourselves and the people around us that seem just a little bit off, or in many cases more than a little bit off, and that are causing harm and damage to others. We talk about the people who you come away from that encounter with them at school, at work, or in your personal life, and you're scratching your head and you say, what was that about? I mean, what were those lies about? Why was this person trying to fool me, to dupe me, to con me into this? How can they be so mean and heartless and remorseless and unempathic? And often we just brush that off and go on about our lives, but if we pay attention to that, we may see, especially in those with whom we have ongoing relationships, that there's really something to be done about it, something that needs to be done about it, and then hopefully those people on their own or with some assistance will get the help they need.
You tell a story in the book about specific stories about people and examples and of some of the characteristics that we may recognize. You tell the story of Greta. Give us a sense of Greta's story.
Well, Greta was someone who's highly talented, but even at a very early age was a bit callous towards the feelings of others. She was started lying at a very early age, very conning, very manipulative of others. As she went through her life, these traits just expanded and got applied in more and more areas. She would take credit for things at school and at work that really weren't her work at all. She would, again, lie about things. And she gets out into the adult workplace and treats other people badly and is totally self-centered with complete lack of concern for the people around her. The sort of person who manages up very well, very friendly with higher-ups, but treating peers and subordinates very badly.
You use her as an example as an almost psychopath. When does it become psychopathic behavior?
Well, technically when we would run through the checklist and she would get a score of 30 to 40, and yet in Greta's example, as in the other examples in the book, we see people who would score maybe only in the 20 to 30 range, and yet their behavior is deeply offensive and harmful to others. So they get into the full-blown psychopath range when they have a sufficient number and severity of these symptoms.
And but whose responsibility is it? I mean, in most cases, we're not scoring these people, right? Where I mean, we're assuming that they are being monitored in some way, but most people don't fall in that category, right?
Well, exactly. And, you know, for lay people, they shouldn't be scoring other people. We just suggest that they pay attention to those behaviors and what's going on around them, and then chat with other folks, talk to other people at work, other people in the family, talk to professionals to help make some sense. Most people, you know, at some point in their lives do some things that they kind of wish they hadn't. But they feel remorse about it. You know, people lie. Everyone tells little white lies. People take little things from work. It's very common. But there's a tipping point at which the behavior, again, becomes so persistent, so extensive, and so severe that we find ourselves in a really problematic range of behavior.
And you talk about this in the book, but if someone is trying to figure out if someone else that they know may fit into this category of a psychopath or an almost psychopath, it's a very difficult thing to cut ties with that person, isn't it?
It can be. If it's early in a relationship, it may make the most sense to just say goodbye and get out of it. Much harder if it's a long-term committed relationship, you know, if we're talking about interpersonal relationship. And one has to be careful, because if the person is further along on the scale towards full-blown psychopathy, there may be some risk of harm in that. Certainly in the workplace setting, it can be very difficult.
You look at someone like either Jared Wafner or in Tucson, or this gentleman in Aurora, California, or Colorado, excuse me. At what point, because as you indicated earlier on, eventually more and more stories come out and a picture is painted. But how does someone like that fly so low under the radar, or don't they?
Well, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. So we see all these news reports now about this fellow in Colorado being a loner. Well, the world is full of loners. There are plenty of loners out there who are high achievers and making great contributions in math and science and the arts. You know, it's okay to be a loner. We need to look at a broader range of behaviors and considerations. People can fly under the radar. We have examples. Jivalry Wong in Binghamton, New York, who shot, killed 14 people at a center for immigrants, who's helping people adjust. He had been psychotic for many, many years. He'd been psychotic since 1995. He believed the police were harassing him and chasing him. He had gun permits and all that time. And it wasn't until almost 15 years later or 16 years later that combination of his underlying paranoia and events in his life tipped him over into an act of violence. And that was losing his job at the ShopVac Corporation when it shut down.
Since you're here, and I was curious about it this weekend, I was watching the coverage, much of the coverage over the weekend, and I was tuned into CNN last night, and there is a great effort, and I understand the motive behind it, but there is a great effort to focus on the victims and not on the man who shot the people in the movie theater on Friday morning. But CNN and the anchor said that they were not going to use the name of the shooter. They were not going to say the name James Holmes. And they were going to avoid that as not to give him further credibility, I guess, for want of a better term, put him in a spotlight, and to keep the people who were the victims in the spotlight instead. I have thoughts on that as a journalist, but I'm curious to your thoughts on it as a psychiatrist of, does that do anything? Because at one point during the coverage, they actually referred to him as he who shall not be named.
Well, you know, it's interesting when people do terrible things in our society. One of the things we try to do is to banish their name, so we don't want to honor them. We don't want to give them publicity. One could argue that, you know, tearing down statues of Joe Paterno and taking his name off of awards falls into sort of a similar category.
Yes.
You know, in this case, they may be trying to be very responsible in the sense of trying to avoid copycat phenomenon. For people, if indeed part of his motive was publicity for himself, to be known, and that certainly happens in some of these cases, by not naming him, perhaps they're trying not to satisfy that desire, that motivation on his part to be a big person, to be a well-known person, which could lie at the heart of his actions.
But we can do both, right? We can report the story, report the news, tell people what has happened in a responsible manner, and still honor those who have lost their lives and have been injured in this horrific
attack. Absolutely, and I hope that we do that, because that's, you know, the most helpful thing to the community.
Dr. Ronald Shouten is a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School in Boston. He is co-author of the new book, Almost a Psychopath. It is published by Hazelden. Dr. Ronald Shouten, I thank you very much for being with us this morning. A great appreciation. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.